A baby's immune system develops rapidly in the first 1,000 days of life, and within the first 6 months to a year being the most important time in a baby's immune development. My guest today is Meenal Lele. She is a medical researcher and the founder of Little Mixins, a pediatrician-recommended allergy prevention product. And in her book, The Baby and the Biome, she explains how diet, environmental toxins, antibiotics, and even common parenting practices can damage the delicate balance of our children's microbes, increasing our risk for a host of immune diseases, including eczema, asthma, food allergies, irritable bowel syndrome, and many, many more. My author's work, Meenal's work, was through her own story. She discovered firsthand how critical our microbiomes are to our overall health when she sought to find the root cause for her son's food allergies. She drew on her medical background, and through extensive research and interviews with scientists and doctors, Lele discovered a simple, practical steps and solutions that all parents and pregnant moms can take to help foster a healthy and protective microbiome in their baby. The Baby and the Biome will empower parents to protect and safeguard their children's health for years to come. It is estimated that 5.6 million children under the age of 18 have allergies. This is approximately one in every 13. So this is up by nearly a million people since 2018. So we need to get a handle on our infant gut health to help prevent the long-term sequelae of allergenic and immune diseases that plague more than 80 million Americans. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark.
Meenal Lele is the author of The Baby and the Biome, a revolutionary look at immune disease and what one parent has learned to reverse it. Meenal has designed, run, and published multiple large clinical studies across orthopedics, vascular medicine, and allergies. She has an engineering and a business degree from the University of Pennsylvania and is the founder of Little Mixins, an allergy prevention company for children. As a food allergy and asthma parent, she is committed to bringing an end to immune diseases that plague more than 80 million Americans. Meenal Lele, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome to talk to you.
I love your book, The Baby and the Biome, because I think so many parents these days feel helpless at the epidemic of allergies and autoimmune conditions and, you know, chronic sinusitis, chronic strep infections, chronic ear infections, all of these things that we can really work on if we're crafting our baby and the biome. So start us out. Just tell us what got you into this work.
Well, what got me into this work was actually that happening to me personally, right? So when you know, my son got really sick and it just felt like it was coming out of nowhere. It was totally random. I didn't understand why was he getting sick. And I think the worst part was it wasn't just one thing, right? Like you could kind of accept if he gets, you know, you get sick in one way, but then it was that he just like kept getting sicker and sicker, and yet like we were doing all the right things, like everything the doctor was telling us, you know, as promptly as possible, we're doing all the right things and he's just getting sicker. So this really led me to do, you know, kind of be like, what are we missing here? What's not being understood? And what was, I think, really frustrating and confounding was that it's not like this is a weird hunch. This is the consensus. Like now I go to some of these meetings, the American Academy of Allergy and, you know, all these things. And if you just listen to the talks, they all agree like what's going on. And yet, like the average allergist or the average doctor, pediatrician, whatever that I'm meeting doesn't know any of that, you know? And so, of course, then the average parent doesn't know it. And I thought, this is not that complicated. Like, we can tell people what's going on and make it simple for the average parent, and we don't have to wait, you know, a whole cycle of people going through med school to learn it.
Why do you think it is that when you go to these allergy conferences, everybody is saying that, you know, it's related. I'm assuming that people are saying it's related to the microbiome, it's related to food, it's related to environmental toxins, it's related to stress, it's related to nutrient deficiencies and excesses. It's, you know, it's related to mold, whatever it is. But why do you think that the average allergist, like the one that you were seeking care from, is not up to speed on this?
You know, because the truth is, for despite what we think, like most people after they go to medical school, they stop learning new stuff. You know, this is published in all the allergy journals and everything, but most doctors, if I'm, you know, aren't actually reading the journals. Most doctors are not going to these conferences because you kind of see the same people at all the conferences, right? So it's kind of a group of researchers and sort of the super curious folks or whatever it is, you know, that separates them. I don't. And there's just the folks that are living their lives practicing medicine as they were taught it. And I think that's just a lot of it comes down to this very human arrogance that we all have, that like everything that needs to be known is already known.
That's cute. That's
Do I
so
need to
cute,
constantly, why do I need to
right?
constantly update my knowledge? Because we already know everything we need to know, you know? And it's just, we are not the least arrogant of creatures.
No, we're not. In fact, we had a great philosophical discussion on the show about smart people and stupid animals, and like that really clear, like, is it better to live in this conscious awareness with this verbal communication capacity where we not only struggle with arrogance and fear and you know, all of just the lack of worthiness, all these things, or would it be better just to like go and be a zebra, you know, and just not have a care in the world and never get stomach ulcers, you know? But yeah, but you are right. It's silly to say we're just going to stop learning, you know, and stop exploring. And so, you know, you teach about the baby and the biome, and start us out and talk to us about really early warning signs of autoimmune conditions or immune conditions in general, such as susceptibility to viral and bacterial infections, as well as susceptibility to environmental allergens and antigens. What do parents need to be looking out for first to know that they have the power to change things quickly?
Well, so let's get back to that question about changing things quickly, because I would say that honestly, the better thing to do is, you know, right now there's these gut health tests and things like that. And people are like, oh, it's so great. I got this gut test and it told me to do the right things. And I'm like, but you could have done the right things without taking the test, right? Like, it's like you don't need to fail the SATs to learn that you could have studied for the SATs. Like, you could just study for it ahead of time. And no matter whether you needed to or not, like, you'd still be in the same position, right? So I would say that, but the first warning signs, you know, that aside, the first warning signs so far seem to really appear on a baby's skin. You start to see a lot of signs of dryness, like a baby's skin, you know, that isn't super springy and soft and things. So the dryness of the skin, cracks in the skin, redness, acne, all these things. And again, like a lot of these warning signs don't necessarily mean they're doomed, but it's already telling you, right, that the skin that should be perfect and healthy and whatever, something's off. And then, you know, from there you can say, oh, okay, well, the immune system's clearly reacting to something, right? Because whenever you have redness of the skin, that's your immune system creating that redness, creating the rash or anything else. So skin is usually the first thing. But the other big thing for babies is also obviously a lot of those early gut issues. Like, are they having trouble sleeping? Like, those are just like with an adult, a healthy baby sleeps well, doesn't cry a lot. you know, is in a decent mood most of the time. Even for a baby, they should be able to like track, you know, pay attention to things, like have that sort of cognitive awareness. They don't itch, they don't scratch, they're not fussy. And because babies don't have a lot going on. So if they're fussy, they're fussy about something, right? They don't have existential crises yet. They're not worried about the state of climate change or something. They're just like, oh, my belly hurts. Right. And so, you know, those are the signs. And I think that each of those things, like, we're so quick to brush them off. And again, I understand that impetus, because at the same time, we don't want to, you know, have everyone chasing down everything. And yet, like, I don't think it's wrong to say, hey, you know, 2 days in a row, your baby's belly's been off, like, something's not right. Can we make this better?
Mm-hmm. What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions that parents have about the baby biome, and what do you really wish people understood more about?
I think, I mean, the biggest misconception really is, I don't think people are aware that, I don't want to say that it exists, but what it does. And I guess because on some level, I knew that I have bacteria on my skin. Like, I remember in high school thinking, you know, talking and learning about like the mites that live on us and stuff like that, right? So intellectually speaking, I knew that it existed, but I didn't really think about what that meant. And I don't think most people understand that it's the microbes in a baby's gut that are processing the breast milk. It's not your baby that's processing it. It's the microbes. So wrong microbes, not processing the breast milk correctly. It's the microbes on the skin that are actually deciding how oily it is or how soft it is or other things. So again, wrong microbes, not going to have the right outcome, you know, or the skin. Even as we get older in the obesity epidemic, there's a lot of data that shows it's the microbes that are controlling our insulin production, or I shouldn't say controlling, maybe is an overstatement. They're affecting it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that's the biggest misconception, is like, we tend to think of diseases and problems as like genetic or just external viruses, bacteria, but that's not it. Like, these sort of microbially involved chronic illnesses are actually our biggest concern today.
You know, I was just listening to a Mind Body Green podcast the other day about how to create an antiviral gut. And the author was describing how one of the key constituents in human breast milk is prebiotics that help to nourish and feed the microbiome. And so we are designed to be able to pass along good nutrition for the microbiome. And, you know, you mentioned obesity being governed by the microbiome. Obesity in a lot of ways is also governed by the health of the mother during pregnancy, because we pass along the insulin resistance, which makes it harder to process, which makes the gut go a little bit haywire as well. And so, yes, I think that you hit the nail on the head, that there are a bajillion functions of the microbiome. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of like mom guilting and mom shaming around vaginal birth, C-section birth, breastfeeding, formula, all the things. And, you know, as much as you want to do the best case scenario, life doesn't always go that direction. And so what is your, you know,
or it can go in that best case scenario. Like, I had vaginal birth, breastfeeding, you know, all the things were great. Really sick kid, right? So it's nothing's absolute, but sorry, go ahead.
Yes. And I was just saying, like, so what is your opinion on just how important is vaginal birth? You know, do you think that like doing the vaginal secretions on a towel can help? Like, you know, what do you think truly is the best case scenario, and how do we mitigate the risks of the worst case scenario?
Right. So yeah, I mean, the truth is the best case scenario is that you have a completely, you know, medication-free pregnancy, of natural birth, it's vaginal, that you're able to breastfeed, and you can breastfeed for a lengthy amount of time. That is the best case scenario. There's no arguing about that.
Well, and I think I might also add to that, like, during pregnancy, if you're able to, eat the 30 different plants a week and, you know, take high quality, you know, supplements or whatever. I think that as well is best case scenario.
It is. It's the best case scenario. And so if we can all get there, that's great. But I agree with you. And I talk about this a lot in the book. It's like this is really important for everyone to understand, is that every insult to our system is not a death knell for the system. It is it's a hit, you know, but you can come back from every hit. And so if you can't have the natural birth. And I think one of the biggest challenges with the C-section is actually the massive amount of antibiotics the mom has to be on, and then therefore the baby's on because of the C-section, right? But you have to have the antibiotics if they're filleting you open, right? So we can't get around that. So then what? Well,
you're also using pain medications, which are going to disrupt your microbiome.
Then the best case scenario is that you can rapidly get onto the baby onto a probiotic that you are able to do the vaginal swabbing, assuming the mom has a healthy vaginal microbiome, that the baby's able to get, you know, some lactobacillus rhamnosus, maybe some B. infantis or other bifidobacteria into their gut immediately. And then maybe the baby, you know, you're able to breastfeed. If you are not able to breastfeed and the baby's drinking formula, I mean, formula is still food, but a lot of the formulas have started adding in these sort of prebiotic fibers to help feed the gut bacteria. Or again, you can supplement with a probiotic that'll kind of keep replenishing the system in the hopes that bacteria, and it does show in studies that it will eventually seed. And I think longer term, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that I know that are working on some of basically better and better probiotics, right? Mm-hmm. That would get to the keystone species that we really, really need. And I think that's where that'll go. So, but just for those things, I mean, some of it is unavoidable, but it doesn't mean game over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said. It's not a death nail. It's just it's a setback. You can always overcome a setback. And so vaginal swabbing is not something that we've really talked about on the show. And I threw it out there just like everybody would know what we're talking about. Is there like a best practice for anybody who's had a C-section, or is it just kind of like, give it your best, girl?
No, there was a guideline from NHS in the UK, which I'm told that they've actually kind of pulled back on. But their guideline was bring gauze in a clean, you know, bag, and prior to the delivery, insert the gauze into the mom's vaginal canal, basically, and then you just, you know, you take it out and you just kind of wipe it all over the baby's like mouth, so that, because they do ingest a lot of it as they're passing through, ideally like just on their skin, on their anus, like places where they would like otherwise be coated in it. But even babies born by C-section, you know, they're covered in this, the vernix caseosa, which is like a goopy, thick, kind of gross, like white thing. And, you know, your natural inclination is to scrub that baby down. But honestly, one of the best things you can do is just leave that on. Like you can kind of wipe off the excess amounts of it if you want, and then almost just like massage it into the baby's skin. And it's like a coating. And a lot of countries in Europe tell you not to bathe your baby for the first 2 to 4 weeks. And I was just looking back at like a study I remember coming out in 2020 that said, bathing a baby more than once a week doubles their risk of eczema. And it's just, the more that we bathe the baby, we strip their skin, you know, the more chances that you can get sensitization through that skin. So I don't think there's exactly a best practice protocol. That's the protocol the UK used to recommend. But like I said, they don't really have a guideline anymore. Mm-hmm. So it may be a little bit more of like a go for it, girl.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole point of it is just expose the baby as early as possible, you know? And I completely agree with you about not overbathing children. And a lot of people say don't bathe the child until at least the umbilicus falls off, or, you know, but a week or two seems totally reasonable. I mean, unless the child is visibly soiled. I mean, you know, babies smell, they have that baby aroma, you know?
But even if they're visibly soiled, like, you can use washcloths and wipe off their butt. Like, it's not, you don't have to dunk them. And I think the biggest thing about that is, even if you want to, you can use warm, clean water, and that's it, right? If you just like psychologically can't get over this idea of your child not taking a bath, then stick to just water. But I think that's really an imposition of sort of our human, I mean, our adult practices that we're, you know, sort of, you know, forcing on the baby. Like I think about, even my dad used to be like this a lot. Like he's just sort of like a neat freak, and he can't not shower. He showers, I think, like twice a day. And he just finds it like mind-boggling that nobody else needs to do this, right? And I'm like, well, we're not you, you know? Mm-hmm. And a baby is not you. They don't need to be bathed all that often. And they definitely don't need harsh chemically soaps.
Which ones do you think are the worst? And, you know, not to name brands, but just ingredients that are the worst.
I mean, I know that there's been a ton of research on the sodium lauryl sulfates, like the stuff that makes everything foam. And it comes by like a bajillion different names, like dodecyl sulfate and things like that. All of those are really bad. They're shown, they've been proven over and over again to disrupt the tight junctions between the cells in the skin and in the gut. I don't know that there's like a great one. Like it's just like not really necessary. Like you don't need to be scrubbing bacteria off your skin unless you have an open wound, right? Like you just don't really. Like why? Where is it going? Like what are you, when? And then I think the most important question you should be asking yourself is, if, let's say you did scrub all the bacteria off your baby, you feel great about that. That bacteria is going to get replaced immediately by the next thing the kids touches, you know, on their clothes, on the carpet. Are you sure that's the bacteria you'd rather have the kid have on their skin? Mm-hmm. Like, why do we think that's correct, right? So honestly, the stuff that they're almost like born with and are naturally feeding, that's probably the best for them.
Mm, absolutely. I agree with the amount of harsh chemicals that are in baby products these days are really like, it's really kind of scary. And you know, I thought it was hilarious when the airlines came out and were like, we think we might have actually been doing more harm than good by over sterilizing the airplanes. And all of us that understand the absolute critical importance of the terrain that we are exposed to and all the things, it's like, yeah, we know. We've known this. And a friend reached over to me the other day and she was like, do you want some hand sanitizer? And I was like, no, honey, I will keep all of my bacteria. Thank you so much. Let's talk about what all do you think is leading to this explosion of immune conditions in children? And, you know, before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. This episode of The Lindsay Elmore Show is sponsored by Sambucol. Now that the holidays are over and we are well into the new year, I like to assess all of my routines. What's serving me? What isn't? And is there anything I can add to help aid me in my health and wellness journey? This is where Sambucol comes in. I recently started taking Sambucol's black elderberry every morning to help support my immune system so I can keep doing what I need to do every single day. It's a simple act of self-care that I can do without much effort. Sambucol is made from premium European black elderberries, which are a natural source of powerful antioxidants and key vitamins like A, C, and E. They help support a healthy immune system so you can keep moving. And Sambucol has many ways to get your daily helping of black elderberry, like syrups, gummies, chewable tablets, drink powders, capsules, and more. They even have products for kids, too. My listeners can get an extra 15% off of their next order of $9.99 or more at SambucolUSA.com by using my promo code Lindsay15 at checkout. That's 15% off your order of $9.99 or more at SambucolUSA.com. That's code LINDSEY/15 at checkout. And here's a pro tip. Save this promo and the website address in your notes apps. I know you're busy, and oftentimes we forget things that we intend to remember. So head right now to SambucolUSA.com and use code Lindsay15 to save 15% at checkout. And now, let's get back to the show. What do you think are the most important things for parents to avoid?
So I want to be clear, like what I think is actually just whatever I've read in the journals, right? So I don't, as a non-immunologist and someone who's never really done any research into this, I don't have independent thoughts on this, to be clear. What they're showing, and I think one of the important things to note is that all of these conditions, I think it was Dr. Martin Blaser that called them like kind of the hockey stick conditions, and they all follow this exact same curve. Like it's right around the same time, type 1 diabetes, the food allergies, the eczema, a lot of ADHD and autism, like multiple sclerosis, like all these things, they just start skyrocketing it. Like, and you can just lay the graphs over each other and you almost couldn't tell which disease it is, right? So, okay. So then what we have is the ability, unfortunately, when we see a sick person, we're able to finally then say like, what's different between the sick person and the healthy person? And it keeps coming back to the same things. Like their microbiomes have shifted in a way apart, you know, from the people who are healthy. And so, okay. So like, that's fine. There's different bacteria there, but like why? And it really comes down to the fact that it's kind of a sort of what we call like a circular problem, you know, or like a feedback loop, where you get different bacteria, they create different outputs, like different acids, different metabolites and things like that. Then that affects how our own bodies, right? Because we, like I said, we use their output as our softening of our skin, right? So now we have different skin. And so our immune systems are now put into a different place, and our immune systems are put into a heightened state of inflammation. That's really the core of this. Across the board, everybody's baseline rate of inflammation has gone up considerably. And the easiest way I think to think of this is like, imagine if you are trying to play like a video game, right? And you just had 10 hours of sleep and you ate a healthy breakfast, and now you've got to do like this concentration game of like picking things, right? That's what your immune system has to do all the time, right? If you had a pulled an all-nighter before, just imagine how many mistakes you're going to make in that same video game, right? And that's what increasing the baseline rate of inflammation is for your immune system. You're basically putting it into this state where it's so prone to making mistakes. And what it starts to do is it starts to mistake this, you know, this external protein for something it should attack. It starts to mistake, or it starts to fight a virus and then accidentally create an antibody that's able to fight your own pancreas. Now you have type 1 diabetes, right? Like it's basically just making mistakes, but because we've put it into this situation where it's like super addled. And so for all of these diseases to go away, the goal is basically to take down that baseline level of inflammation, right? And the way we do that, again, is by the immune system calms down when our barriers are thick and secure. The immune system just has to do less work, right? If nothing is penetrating your skin, for example, the immune system can stay cool, right? But if you have a super, like imagine you just have cuts all over you, your immune system has to be on high alert, and then it's just going to make mistakes. Mm. And that's basically the like the pathway by which this is happening. And so, you know, how do we take this baseline inflammation down? So we have to protect baby skin. We have to protect their guts, and we have to protect their airways. So that's airways is a lot about minimizing air pollution, unnecessary viruses. The gut is about making sure that they get the right bacteria. They're eating a high fiber, vegetable heavy diet. That's, you know, laying down a real thick mucus, so nothing's crossing the barrier. And with your skin, it's that we don't want to strip the skin constantly. And we want there to be a nice, healthy balance of bacteria on the skin that poop out the right short chain fatty acids that keep our skin like with a nice, thick, like Vaseline coat over it.
Yes. I mean, it is amazing how everything is all connected, and that really you get down to it and it's inflammation. You know, I talk about the 8 root causes of disease. And people fuss at me because they're like, you didn't put inflammation. And I said, that's because all of the 8 root causes of disease cause inflammation. And so stress is inflammatory. Toxins are inflammatory. Allergens and antigens are inflammatory. Infections are inflammatory. Like it just, it's like, yes, but something has to cause the inflammation. And I remember when I was in pharmacy school and in residency, the way that people would describe asthma is that the lungs and specifically the musculature surrounding the alveoli are twitchy. And what you are saying is that basically all of these immune conditions, it's the immune system being twitchy and overreacting to things that do not need to be overreacted to. Now,
right.
You know,
and I just want to be clear about one thing, which is that that's how the condition starts, right? That's how we make the antibody against our pancreas. But once that antibody is there, there's no way to turn that off. Now your body is just going to start attacking it until it kills our ability to make insulin. You have type 1 diabetes, right? Same thing with the food allergies. It's like it made the mistake, but once it's tagged that peanut as a problem, it's never going to stop.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And so that's sort of the problem.
Yeah, it's really hard. And there are allergists that specifically work in reversing food allergies, but it is exceptionally difficult. And, you know, in Chinese medicine, even type 1 diabetes is considered reversible. It's certainly exceptionally more difficult to reverse than type 2 diabetes. But, you know, I take a lot of heat from people who are parents of children with type 1 diabetes because it is so commonly thought of to be completely incurable. But to me, it actually kind of would give me hope as a parent to say, like, there are some things you can do to at least reduce the risk, even if you can't completely reverse it.
Right. You can reduce the risk of having the problem in the first place. And then I agree with you, right? Like, fundamentally, there might be a way to basically eventually get the body to stop making that antibody. And then maybe the body can start to heal itself. But that's really what has to happen. It is really difficult to get the body. Once it's generated these antibodies, it's very hard to get it to stop.
Yes, absolutely. It is really hard once you've started down that pathway to reverse it. Now, raising a child with an immune condition has a unique set of challenges compared to being an adult with an immune condition. And so, what do you think some of the biggest struggles that parents face when they are trying to work with their child who is maybe suffering from eczema, is a baby who's super colicky and has no language capacity? Just take us down that pathway.
So I think the most challenging, I was recently at a whole conference about, you know, developing therapies for immune conditions. And you know, this kind of kept coming up, is that a lot of them are invisible conditions because it's happening inside the person's body, right? Like the person explained, one of the researchers, he was saying how he's developed this sort of tremor. And when he gets on a plane, people see him kind of struggling with something and immediately always someone will jump up and help him. Right. But he has a food allergy and nobody can know that. Nobody, you don't even knows what to do because they can't really like go into you and stuff it. There's nothing they can do. Right. Like, and eczema the kids are so itchy and their skin is peeling and they're like, they're bleeding over their clothes. And yet there's like, you're like, there's nothing we can do, right? Like you're like reacting to the world. And I think the most challenging parts about that, other than it being a silent condition, is that everybody else around you feels helpless to help. And so the burden like kind of 100% sits on you. And it's not that nobody wants to help, right? But it's often that they are kind of helpless to do anything about it. And for the kid, that's really it. It's like, it's really recognizing that all of the solution has to come from within. And I mean, that's like, whether that's about, you know, avoiding your triggers, like just being really good about avoiding your triggers, being really good about taking your medication, proactively doing certain things, or being willing to maybe to go through uncomfortable stuff to work on treatments. Like, nobody else can really help you. It's not like a broken leg where someone can like pick up your clothes for you for a while. It's just like, nobody else can help you unless you help you.
Right. It's interesting, and this is a little bit of a departure, but it's so timely for today. We are recording this episode on December 14th, And the invisible conditions that people go through that we just gloss over really hit home for me today. One of my favorite dancers was found having completed a suicide yesterday morning, and the news broke about it today. And so what you are saying is like, look, just like we have a better consciousness about how mental health conditions are invisible and sometimes doesn't come out until it's absolutely tragic, so too do autoimmune conditions, and so too do allergies that simply cannot be seen, versus, to your point, the tremor, or you know, you even think of more subtle physical signals. Like, I think of nystagmus when drug levels are too high. I think of jaundice if people's livers are so clogged. But yes, it is so important that we never underestimate what someone else might be going through on a daily basis. Okay, so you mentioned the importance of taking medications, and I love to help people understand that there is a time and a place for medications, and then there are other times that we're just not there. So tell us about your allergy prevention strategy that you use with your brand of supplements called Little Mixins.
All right. So with Little Mixins, you know, the company is all about prevention of reducing the risk of these various diseases, right? We can't 100% prevent anything. So when it comes to eczema, we know, actually, this is really interesting, across 10 different clinical studies, and this was recently published, a meta-analysis in the American Journal of Clinical Dermatology, that when women take, when L-rhamnosus is given perinatally, so in the third trimester and then the first 6 months after, it cuts the risk of eczema by 60%, right? Which is a huge, it's just like a really simple, very cost-effective.
And so this is mom supplementing while pregnant and then baby supplementing after birth.
Yeah. And then mom, and so if mom's breastfeeding, she can do it. If the, or baby can do it, or if, you know, formula feeding, the baby can do it. And then when it comes to food allergy, interestingly, the immune system, again, sort of has this like window, basically, as we understand it. It seems that, and you can see it on a biomarker level, that at between a certain age, the immune system sort of biases towards creating this sort of, we call them tolerogenic antibodies and tolerogenic cells, where it's actually trying to learn what's safe. So if you feed a baby enough of the proteins on a regular basis, you know, in this window, the body's more prone to developing what are called IgG4 antibodies and T regulatory cells. And so you develop a tolerance to that food. Whereas if you miss that window and then you just, or you just randomly eat it, and then, you know, you don't eat it again until age two, the body's more prone to developing the IgE antibodies that trigger an allergic reaction. So with prevention, when it comes to eczema prevention, the thing that seems to work better than almost anything, again, is this the supplementation with L-rhamnosus. And then when it comes to food allergy prevention, it's getting those proteins, 2 grams of each protein every week, into the baby from when they're 4 months old to when they're a month old. And so we basically just said, hey, that's not that complicated. You know, like, on its, these proteins exist. Let's make it really efficient and easy for parents to have them.
And these are some of the like more allergenic proteins? Are we talking like soy and peanuts, etc.?
Yeah, so like our probably our most popular solution is something we call the Daily Mix that has peanut, almond, cashew, walnut, soy, and sesame, and a hard-boiled egg. It's a really interesting product. Interestingly, babies are more likely to sort of trigger an allergic response early if they're fed raw egg. But if they're fed a hard-boiled egg, and I can go into all the fun science about why this is, but if they're fed a hard-boiled egg or a well-cooked egg, they develop the sort of tolerance to it. The bias is to develop the tolerance. And so we make this hard-boiled egg protein powder.
Super interesting product formulation, because you're basically hitting the big 8 allergens is what you're working on with there. And why do you think that like the 2 grams and kind of this like micro dosing of the proteins is what is effective?
So 2 grams is actually a hefty amount. Even when it comes to peanut, you know, it's like a a pretty large amount. And so it's not really microdosing. You're giving the baby like a meal's worth of this, if you will, or and you know, we don't really know why, but there was a bunch of studies and they showed that once the baby stopped eating that much every week and kind of went dipped below that, they got no protective effect. And so logically, what would have to happen is you know the immune system has to be triggered enough to actually generate a response. Like passive amounts of things can often just make the immune system ignore it, right? Because again, the immune system is getting assaulted by like a bajillion things all day long, so it's got to ignore a lot also, otherwise it'll go berserk.
Yes, I mean it's kind of like your immune system has to figure out what to ignore, just like your brain has to figure out with all the stimuli. You know, you think about, I'm sitting here in this office, I've got lights on, I've got microphones working, and yet I'm still able to focus on you because I know that that's my job here, and I'm able to like cut it all out. The immune system has to do something very, very similar. So you have a book, The Baby and the Biome, and you know, you wrote this specifically to help people bring an end to the plague of autoimmune conditions. And I'm sure our listeners are like, okay, yeah, I've been told this and that and this and that, and it all kind of runs together. And I will blow the punchline for you, friends. It's because all diseases are caused by eight things. That's why we all talk about the same eight things. But what makes your book different? Who did you write it for? And what were some of like the most unexpected things that you learned along the journey of writing?
Right. I think what makes the book really different, and this is, you know, the feedback I've gotten from readers, is this is it's a pretty deep dive into the science, right? Like I don't shy away from talking about Treg cells and this and that, but it's not an overwhelming discussion of the science. And I think, and you know, maybe my brain is a bit wired this way, is that I need to kind of understand the underlying mechanism by which something happens before what somebody's telling me to do about it makes sense, right? Like if you're telling me just to not eat sugar, right? You really need to explain like what is the sugar doing though, right? Or something. And so I feel like this sort of this what the book does really differently is shows parents that, hey, like why do we care about washing? Okay, and when we talk about washing, what is it about the washing? Is it the act of the washing? Is it the type of the soaps that you're using in the washing? Right? Like I make a big differentiation between hand sanitizer and hand washing. A lot of people conflate those two, right? But they're doing actually different things when you think about it. And so I think the book really tries to like parse that stuff and doesn't consider everyone an idiot. I think that's also pretty different. Like I think there's a lot of books, especially targeted at mothers and other people, you know, that sort of like pat you on the head and they're like, you're not going to understand much here, so I won't say anything. But I think what people really have told me they liked about the book is that it treats them like equals and says, you can understand this and it's going to make sense of the world for you. And once it makes sense of the world for you, you're going to have now feel like you have this control. Because until you understand something, you really can't control it.
Wholeheartedly agree. Don't just tell me to do something and not explain why it's important to do that thing. That to me is just, it's not feasible. It's not sustainable. And honestly, it's just not motivational, right? You know, you can tell people don't smoke tobacco, but it doesn't make sense until you start getting into the fact of like, okay, this is actually a class one carcinogen. We know that it causes all of these problems. And so, you know, and then highlight for us more, what are some of the strangest things you learned along the journey of writing the book?
You know, so I think some of the most interesting stuff I learned was like, for example, that there's a strong connection between the state of a mother's, or sorry, a woman's vaginal microbiome and her ability to get pregnant. And one of the things that they can increase, they can supplement with certain lactobacillus strains and increase the success of IVF by like 40%, right? Which is like a daunting, expensive process. And but like it makes sense that if you try and grow a baby in an unfriendly environment, the body's going to reject it, right? The body's going to say, hey, like everything's not great here, so we're going to shutting this down, right?
Yes.
I think like learning about that and how related it is. And then I think the other side of it was maybe something that would have been so obvious to you is just how interrelated all of these things are, right? Like I didn't appreciate, because they feel like different diseases, especially like autoimmune conditions are really different than allergic diseases in many ways, you know? Mm-hmm. And yet they're this sort of like underlying thread between all of them. I think that was really interesting for me to learn. And then lastly is like the nuance of it, right? Because you can start milk supplementation too early and it could trigger the immune system. At the right time, it trains the immune system. Too late, it triggers the immune system again, right? And there's a logic to why it's like this, but there is nuance to it, right? So you can't say blanket things to people. And I feel like, I kind of going back to your last question though, is I was really frustrated by the way they explained like to people what to do about COVID. You know, they would say things like avoid it. And you're like, for how long? Like in what situation? There was so many, like they didn't respect people enough to give them the nuance to say like, in this case, do this, or like, this is why you're doing X, Y, Z. So then you can think about, because every scenario is going to be a little bit different and every baby is going to be a little bit different. So you need to be able to say like, well, what was the thing I was trying to achieve? And like, how does that apply to my situation, right? And otherwise people just get confused and throw their hands up and do nothing.
Yeah, I just look back on the whole COVID scenario and was just like, man, we really missed an opportunity. We missed such a great opportunity to say, hey, there's a new virus coming towards us. We don't know what we're in for. So everything that we have been saying about eating right, exercising, sleeping well, stressing less, you know, taking a good multiple vitamin every day, upping your vitamin C. We just did not do that. And I heard an interview one time with a woman who delivered meals during COVID to elderly people. I don't know if it was like a Meals on Wheels or whatever. And she ended up having to quit because she was like, I am literally bringing these people food that is causing their immune system to become more twitchy because I'm bringing them gluten and dairy and low quality meats and rancid fats and not enough vegetables and all the things. And so it was such a missed opportunity. And you're right that people need to know the nuance. And unfortunately, the discussion, it just wouldn't tolerate it. It would not tolerate any thoughts other than do exactly what we're told, which in a lot of our minds was like, well,
right. Like I think like the classic example of this was like the 6 feet apart. You're like, why six? Like what happens at five? What happens at seven? Does six apply in every situation? Does six different indoors or outdoors or with airflow or not, you know, like, and it just got silly. Like people would just apply rules without any thought to like how that made any sense in different situations, right? Right. And that's like, that's the thing I didn't want, because I think there's so much with parenting that is arbitrary rules. And then parents apply them and they always end up applying them to the detriment. Like you always take things to this logical conclusion. It's like, keep your baby clean. So then people are like, okay, on it, you know, I'm gonna scrub my baby every 30 seconds. That's how clean they're gonna be, right? And then we don't explain like, what was the goal of keeping them clean? It was to stop like a fecal infection from getting into their mouth. Well, we could have avoided that with like really simple steps, like wash their hands and just change their diaper, right? Like we didn't need to, like we, instead of just saying like, keep them clean, we could have said that the thing you're trying to solve is this. And that's where really, I feel like we miss this opportunity so often when it comes to health.
Yeah, we do. And it's because our systems aren't built for healthy people. You know, we live in a system of sick care, but that is why we do what we do and train people to understand that there is definitely a different way of doing things. So listeners, if you would like to pick up a copy of the first chapter of Meenal's book, head to www.lilmixins, that's LILMIXINS.com/pages/book. And you will have the opportunity to get the first chapter of The Baby and the Biome, a revolutionary look at immune disease for free. So everybody, go over and check out Meenal's work at littlemixins.com. Meenal Lele, thank you so much for coming in today and being a guest on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was awesome.
The Amari Kids Pack is the first comprehensive mental wellness solution for kids and teens. It's formulated to help support both the body and the mind, as well as provide key nutrition for children. It contains three different ingredients: the Kids Fundamentals, which is an all-in-one product that supports the gut-brain axis, as well as the immune system of teens and kids. The nutrients in there are specifically shown to help improve mental wellness, and the easy-to-digest formula is perfect for kids of all ages. There's also Kids Vita GBX, and this is a comprehensive multiple vitamin for kids and teens that has more than 50 vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and phytonutrients. It's packed with pure nutrients that kids and teens need as they grow and develop. And it is also developed with the Bright Mind proprietary blend for mental wellness support. It also contains the GBX proprietary blend for the gut-brain axis support, and it features a delicious fruity flavor that kids and teens and even adults of all ages will like. Last but not least, there is one of the best products in all of Amari's product line, in my opinion, and that is Kids Mood Plus. Kids Mood Plus provides significant benefits for mood support, including stress resilience, cognitive performance, calmness, focus, and positivity. And it's a very easy to use and very easily digestible powder that's perfect for both kids and adults. Trust me, the whole family is going to love Kids Mood so much that you might as well get a Kids Pack Plus so that you get two Kids Moods as well as your Kids Fundamentals and your Kids Vita GBX. Give your children the support for their mind, their body, their immune system, their mental alertness, for reductions in their stress and their inflammation, and support their physical vigor and help them to normalize all of their neurotransmitter activity using the Kids Pack from Amari. If you head to lindsayelmore.com/kidspack, you can save $10 on your first purchase of either the Amari Kids Pack or the Kids Pack Plus. That's lindsayelmore.com/kidspack to get started today. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support The Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.